Well, good morning, and I'm so glad that the PA system is working. I have the pleasure of speaking in a number of churches, and I was in a small parish church not so long back, and throughout the whole of the service, the vicar was having trouble with the PA system. And when I got up to speak, I went up into the pulpit, and I said, "There's something wrong with this microphone," and the congregation said, "And also with you." Now, I did share that story in a Baptist church once, and they didn't get it. You know, they didn't understand the joke at all, but I understand that you would. So it's really good to be here. Sue and I grew up on the Rushmere estate, sort of just a bit over the way there. And Sue's school was St. John's, which is actually linked to the church, again, just at the end of the road. And then when Sue graduated from St. John's, she went to Northgate. But I failed the 11 plus, so I ended up in Coppleston. So when coming back along the road here, I had enormous flashbacks of going into that school. Now, when I was there, it was a boys' school and a girls' school. It was a Coppleston Boys Secondary Modern at the time. And there was barbed wire and machine gun posts that would separate the boys from the girls. You weren't allowed to mix. I guess it's now very different, and I haven't been there since, well, when did I leave? 1970. That's an awful long time ago, isn't it? The whole essence of the psalm that we've just had read to us is blessing. God blesses us. That word bless comes out time and time again in this psalm. I think I might actually have it up here so we can put it up there so you can see. If you get fed up with listening to me, you can count how many times the word bless or blessing comes up in there. Some of you already started, I can tell. We don't use that word very much these days, do we? Apart from when someone sneezes, we say, "Oh, bless you." And I don't know if you know that that goes back to the plague, right? Back in the 17th century, when people sneezed, they thought they'd caught bubonic plague and therefore they were going to die. So they just said, "Oh, bless you." And we still say that to people when they sneeze. Or sometimes people, if there's something cute, like a baby or a puppy, they go, "Oh, bless," right? We don't tend to use that word very much. On the end of my emails, most people at the end of an email, they write, you know, kind regards or best wishes. I tend to write every blessing because I want to be a blessing to other people. Why? Because God has blessed me and therefore I want to bless others. And so I know that we couldn't do this in a Baptist church either, but because we're not in a Baptist church, I want to talk to you. I want to give you a new piece of liturgy. Now, this hasn't been run by the synods or anything like that, but the liturgy that I want us to learn together today is this. We are blessed that we may be a blessing to others. Now, if I say the first phrase, if you could just repeat that phrase, and because I know that you are Ipswich people, are you born... anyone not raised in Suffolk? Just put your hand up if you weren't raised... yeah, well... You'll learn quickly, okay? But us who were raised in Suffolk, we could do this straight off the bat, okay? So, after me, we are blessed, that we may be a blessing to others. Right, and that's the nature of this psalm. So, our view of God is often significantly influenced by our interaction with our earthly fathers. And that can be for good. It can be for bad, it can be indifferent. But often our view of God is influenced by our interaction with our earthly father. Now, my father was a career soldier. He lied about his age and he joined up when he was 15. He wanted to get away from a physically very abusive family background. My grandfather on my father's side lost a leg during the First World War and he was a very bitter man. He took out his anger against my father and some of the other children. So when my father was 15, although we lived in Suffolk, he was actually raised in Cambridge. And he decided that he would run from Cambridge. So he got on a train when he was just over 15 years old, went to Bray St Evans and signed up to join the Suffolk Regiment. I have to keep saying Suffolk because, you know, as we were coming along the A14, you join Suffolk twice. Did you know that? It's one of the few counties that's doubly blessed. Right, you sort of come through Newmarket and there is welcome to Suffolk, and then suddenly you disappear from Suffolk, you get a bit further down the road and it's welcome to Suffolk again. So he joined the Suffolk Regiment. Now, he was never a disciplinarian. My father was never a disciplinarian. I think that that was a reflection of his own background, that he didn't want to be physically abusive to us as kids. But he was a stickler for timing. And we were very regimented, that if we were said we were going to be there, I knew when I spoke to Linda that the service was going to be at 10:30. Immediately in my mind, I said, I must get there dead on 10:30 or beforehand, right? So he was very, very much on time, and he was very orderly. He was a very orderly man. So everything had its place. And due to his deployments with the army, he was often distant and absent through our childhood. And when I first became a Christian, I became a Christian by, I don't know if you know Dumbarton Road, there's like some playing fields in Dumbarton Road. And in 1968, the folks at Kemble Street Gospel Hall, which is just over the back here somewhere, they decided they were going to have a mission on to the ungodly Rushmere Estate, which is where I lived. And it was pretty ungodly at the time. I wasn't going to I wasn't going to church. We didn't grow up as a church-going family. But the folks at the Kemble Street Gospel Hall, they had a mission over there. And for the first time in June 1968, I heard about who Jesus was and why he died for me. And I decided to give my life to him. It was about 9:30 on June the 26th, 1968, somewhere about then. But my view of God as Father was influenced by my own father. So I always thought that God was a bit distant and out there somewhere. And what I had to do was to try to please him. Almost nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is that God desires to bless us because he loves us. And you may be thinking, well, actually, my circumstances, don't look, I've got much blessing going on in my life. But the truth is that no matter where we are, his goodness and his mercy follows us everywhere. So I had a wrong view of God. We do face tough times. There are times where we face very tough times. But God says in Psalm 23, David writes in Psalm 23, that God's goodness and mercy, they follow us. So if we stray away from him, goodness and mercy follow us. He never gives up on us. He is always for us. There's a verse in Romans 5 verse 8, that says, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. In other words, we don't have to try to earn this blessing from God. We don't have to try and get really good grades at GCSE, which is pretty good because I didn't get very good grades at GCSE. Sue did much better at GCSE. Well, they were O-levels in our days, right? Some of you can remember O-levels. Some of you are old enough to remember matriculation, right? Yeah, so a couple of smiles there. Some of the young people are going, what is he on about, right? You'll have to ask some of the very older folks in the congregation. But we don't have to earn this blessing from God. So when the psalmist says, may God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face to shine upon us, what the psalmist is really saying is, Lord, you love us, so what we'd like you to do is we'd like you to do what you actually want to do anyway. So we don't have to earn God's goodness. Right? He actually desires to bless us. Not only that, but God wants to bless us even in the difficult times, even when the hard times come. And he wants to bless us in the face of our enemies, in the presence of our enemies. Do you remember that Psalm 23 again? That God lays a table before us in the presence of our enemies. That's partly why we share communion together, why we have this table here, right? And we share this communion together. It's in the face of spiritual enemies. And what we do when we come to this table, as we say to spiritual forces in heaven, in presence of the enemy, we say, we are together. Look what Christ has done for us. He died on the cross for us. He gave himself for us. So that's what that is all about. The bit about in the presence of our enemies. And the enemy of God wants to do the opposite of blessing. So I wonder what you think the opposite of to bless is. Anyone like to offer a view? I realise that, you know, it's a Sunday morning, it's 11 o'clock and you're not really awake yet, but, you know, anyone want to give a view as to what the opposite of to bless is? To curse, exactly. And if you want to look through, you can go to the book of Deuteronomy, and there are two chapters in the book of Deuteronomy. One is all about blessing and the other one's all about cursing. If God wants to bless us, who wants to curse us? It's the enemy of God, isn't it? That's why we have this table in the presence of our enemies, because we are saying to everybody, when we participate of this bread and wine, which we'll do shortly, we're saying we are blessed. And there's nothing you can do about it. We are blessed in order that we might be a blessing. So the enemy of God wants to curse us. And if we are under sin, if we are in trouble or grief, and if there's issues in our lives, God still wants to bless us anyway and to bring us to a place of hope and triumph and joy, even in the presence of our enemies. So do you remember that little liturgy that we learnt? Now, you've already forgotten it, I know, but we can relearn it, okay? So, we are blessed that we may be a blessing to others. So God blesses us, yes, for our benefit, but not just for our benefit. It's so that we can be a blessing to others. And because of he blesses us, we praise him. There's a refrain in that psalm. Twice it comes up. It says, verse 3, may the peoples praise you, O God. So we're blessed, so all, may the peoples praise you. And then again in verse 5, says it twice. So we are blessed. So we absorb that. We say, yes, thank you so much, Father. And I want to give you the glory and you the praise for blessing us. O God, may all the peoples bless us. May God bless us, and may we bless others. I want to give you two very quick examples of how others are blessing others because they are blessed. It's the story of two leprosy hospitals. The first one is in Nepal, and I just want to take you on a very quick journey. It will only take us about 5 minutes maximum. To talk about what happened following the incredible earthquake that hit Nepal in April 2015, so just over 2 years ago. And then I just want to show you a short video clip, which is about 6 minutes long, which is about another hospital, another leprosy hospital, and about how they are blessing their local community. They have been blessed, and now they're blessing their local community. So let's just... this is a place called Anandaban in Nepal. It's in the foothills of the Himalayas. And actually, if you were to turn round from where I was taking the picture and look the other way, you'd see Everest on the horizon. So these hills in the background here, they're part of the Himalayas. It's just outside the capital, Kathmandu. It's on an awful road, on a side of a cliff road, that keeps on getting washed away. Every time there's a big rainstorm, there's a mudslide, and it washes the road away, and they have to sort of rebuild the road. But it's outside of Kathmandu, because the people in the city of Kathmandu, when we started to look to build this over 50 years ago, the people said, we don't want a leprosy hospital in the capital. If you want to treat leprosy people, go and do it somewhere else. And so we did. And so we built this hospital outside Kathmandu. It's actually a world-class hospital for what's called reconstructive surgery. Some of you may know that people who suffer from leprosy get very badly clawed hands. If it's not treated quickly, they get very clawed hands. They lose sensation, they get clawing of their hands, and they start to lose the use of their hands, and it also happens with the feet as well. And what the doctors at this hospital have done is they have worked out how to give people movement back in their hands. I won't give you the gory details because it's before Sunday lunch and we don't want to go into too much detail about surgery, but what they can do is they can't give people the feeling back, but they can help people to do that, which is called opposing motion, and that means if they can do that, then they can hold tools, they can work. And this is a world-class center. People come from all over the world to learn how Dr. Napier and his team do this stuff, right? But in April, 2 years ago, there was a violent earthquake and a lot of the hospital was damaged and a lot of the whole of the country was severely impacted, but the hospital was severely damaged. You can see some of the damage here just from the short burst. Now, that one didn't fall down. They're still propping that up. But if I was that guy, I wouldn't stand there personally. But he has more faith than I do. Okay. So what they did, they had some tents which they used during festival time, and there was some flat ground, so they quickly erected these rather nice-looking tent things here, and they moved all the patients and all the beds outside of the hospital and started to treat the patients outside because they were fearful that if there was an aftershock, even the buildings that didn't come down would come down. And then something very odd happened. The Nepali army started bringing people who had been impacted by the earthquake, who had crash injuries, they had fractures, etc. They started bringing them to the hospital. Now, up until this point, no one would go near this hospital because it was a leprosy hospital. And so the local people wouldn't go to this hospital that was on their doorstep. They would rather take the bus and a two-hour bus ride into Kathmandu for treatment rather than go to the hospital that was actually right on their doorstep. They didn't come anywhere near the hospital because of that fear and that stigma around leprosy. But because the road had got damaged, there had been another landslide, they couldn't get to Kathmandu, the army started bringing the people to the hospital. And you can see that the surgery team, because they were good at hand and foot surgery, they could deal with the fractures, they moved the operating theatre into the open air as well. So this is them moving that outside. They set the beds up and they started to treat the people. And you can see some of those. And what was really interesting is that obviously the beds were full of leprosy patients. The hospital was full. It's about a 120-bed hospital. And they were full of leprosy patients. But the leprosy patients said, do you know what? We don't need our beds. These people who have got broken limbs and need to be in traction. You can see there's some traction over there. These people who need this stuff, they need the beds. And so the leprosy patient says, we will give up our beds for these people to be in the beds. And if necessary, we will sleep on the floor. They had been blessed by the doctors and the nurses, the Christians who run the hospital. And they then started to be a blessing to others. Do you remember that little piece of liturgy that we said? You know, we are a blessing that we might be a blessing to others. Well, these leprosy patients, they got that. They understood that message. And so they said, no, we're going to give up. It actually went one stage further as well, because the leprosy patients had not been impacted by the earthquake. So they said, look, we can still walk around. So what we will do is we will take the food to the patients in their beds. And so these are leprosy-affected people. They've been cured of their leprosy. They're now collecting the food, and they're taking it to the people in the beds. They have been blessed, and now they are going to be a blessing to others. What do you think that did to the people who are on the receiving end of that? Just think about that for a moment. So here you are. You've come into this hospital that you'd never normally go to. In fact, you would steer a long way away from. Suddenly, someone who's in the hospital has given up their bed for you, and now they're actually bringing you their food as well. Well, they asked the question. Oops, oh, sorry, I'll just do that. So blessing, what blessing does is it breaks the curse and it brings hope. But they started asking this question, why do you do this for us? Right? And although the leprosy patients didn't say it quite like this, they said, we are blessed that we may be a blessing to you. Now, they didn't say it in English because they speak Nepalese. But that's really what they were saying. And that has transformed the whole community's view of the hospital and the community's use of the hospital. And many of you may have given to the earthquake appeal and the Rebuild Nepal appeal, which we did last year. And the community are now coming and using the facilities at that hospital. So God can bring good out of something bad, which is really good news. So God be gracious to us and bless us, and then we can be a blessing to others, and that's what has happened here. So that's one little story. I just want to show you another story. It's on a video, and this story is of another hospital in Purulia in India. Now, they have been serving their local community for a long time. And I like the little chap in the Ipswich Town football kit, by the way. I just want you to know that even though we have lived in Portsmouth and we've also lived in Peterborough, there is only one team on the planet that I ever look for the result. My grandson is an Aston Villa supporter. never mind. But I did take him to the Ipswich Aston Villa game this year, and it was 0-0, so we were both fairly happy, except it wasn't a particularly brilliant game, but there we go. So Perugia have already started to serve their community, so we're just going to watch this, and then I'll come back and we'll just wrap up the talk about God blessing us that we might be a blessing to others.
Sunrise over the outskirts of Perugia, a poor rural community in western Bengal. The roads are already busy as farmers make their way to the fields and women head to market. Also on the road are sick and disabled leprosy-affected people from all across northern India. They come to Perugia because they know the Leprosy Mission Hospital here offers their only hope of treatment. India has one of the highest rates of leprosy in the world, yet those affected by it are still shunned and ostracised. But at Perugia, they know they will find sanctuary and acceptance. Every day they come in their hundreds, and every day that number is growing. My name is Helen Walton. I've come to Perugia on behalf of the Leprosy Mission because this hospital needs our help. The number of people coming for treatment is placing an unsustainable burden on its facilities, and something needs to be done. Oh Jesus, hey Bhagavan, Allah Khuda. This is the reception area for the hospital. It's crowded, it's noisy and chaotic. Many people would have travelled all night. They're desperate, they're poor and they're worried. Perugia Hospital turns no one away, yet the facilities here are just overwhelmed by the volume of people coming through its doors. I spoke to Dr. Joy Deepa, Perugia's deputy superintendent, about the problems that her hospital is facing.
We get patients from all over the state, especially this district, and also from the neighboring states and the nearby districts. We get approximately up to 300 patients per day. And it is a surprising thing that the needs are growing larger and larger because the numbers have increased over the past one and a half years. We have tripled our numbers in terms of services. The need is enormous here.
Despite the queues, patients at Perugia receive the very best medical care. Doctors and nurses here have unrivaled expertise in treating leprosy and can provide a comprehensive range of medical services from diagnosis and medicine to counselling and reconstructive surgery for the damaged limbs. There are also 8 wards for those patients needing more long-term care. But it is the rising number of outpatients that Perugia struggles to cope with.
I've met Kushmi and Gora in the queue this morning at the outpatients department. They're both so severely affected with leprosy, as you can see from Kushmi's hand. They have travelled since 2 o'clock this morning to get to this hospital.
Kushmi has severe disabilities as a result of her leprosy, as well as the sores on her hand. She has an open wound on her leg caused by an ill-fitting artificial limb. Kushmi's first appointment is with a doctor who makes an initial assessment of her condition. But as you can see, there's no privacy in these treating rooms. Overcrowding means anyone can watch and listen to what should be a private, confidential discussion between patient and doctor. Next, Kushmi sees a physiotherapist. He's assessing the nerve damage in her hands and feet.
As you can see, the patient is now in the physiotherapy department getting the treatment she so desperately needs. But there's no privacy for her. The paint's falling off the walls. These leprosy-affected people deserve more than this.
The signs of wear and tear can be seen all around the hospital. When it was built 40 years ago, it was designed to cater for a fraction of the numbers coming here today. This is a building that has simply outgrown its capacity and it's now at breaking point. The good news is there is a solution. I've come to talk to Dr. Pham, the superintendent of Perugia, about a plan to build a new state-of-the-art hospital wing. It will, he tells me, transform patients' experience of the outpatients department, or OPD as it's commonly known.
This is the new proposed site, right, Helen? So we want the OPD where it will be spacious, people have place to sit, there will be privacy, and the doctors can have free space to go and examine the patient, do minor procedures, and also where people can come and share, you know, all the pains, all the sorrows, and above all, that when they go back with, you know, a lot of satisfaction and sense of dignity in their lives.
I'm so excited, having spoken to Dr. Pham, this is where the new outpatients department is going to be, and it's massive. This outpatients department is going to have extra consultation rooms for the doctors, providing privacy. It's going to have state-of-the-art rooms for laboratory testing. It's going to have extra toilet blocks, everything that's needed for people affected with leprosy to have a place that is dignified. It's wonderful to know there's a plan in place to transform Purulia and to make it into a modern, efficient hospital that it needs to be. I can't wait to get back to England to share the news. But before I go, there's one last person I want to see. Kushmi's final consultation is with Gaius, Purulia's artificial limb specialist. He's modelling her leg so a new prosthetic limb can be made for her. It will enable her to walk properly in without pain for the first time in years. For Kushmi, this really will be a miracle. If there is one story that can convince us of the value and purpose of this place of healing, it's Kushmi's. Please will you join me and ensure those who are still outcast, still suffering, can get the help they desperately need.
I've seen firsthand the difference this hospital is making to thousands of people's lives. For this work to continue, we need your support. Together, we can build this new outpatients department. Together, we can make a difference. Thank you.
Please pray for Purulia Hospital and please give what you can to help rebuild the outpatients department by making a donation now. Thank you.
So may God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face to shine upon us, that your ways be known on earth and your salvation among the nations. And what the Christian doctors and the Christian staff at the hospital are doing is they are making God's ways known. They have been blessed, and so they then want to bless others. You were given an envelope, I think, on your way in. So if you'd like to make a contribution towards the new outpatients department, the bulk of the money is actually in now, which is really good news. But we now need to outfit the new building. And if you're a UK taxpayer, you can actually gift aid that donation as well. So just to conclude, I just want to remind us that God desires to bless us, and that being blessed, then we can be a blessing to others. God our Father is gracious to us, and he desires to bless us. His goodness and mercy will be with us no matter what the circumstances are in our lives. And just before I take my seat, I just want to pray for you. May you, O God, continue to be gracious to your children here today. Bless them. Make your face to shine upon them. May they know your ways in their lives, whatever their circumstances. And may their families, their friends, their neighbours, their work colleagues, all who they come in contact, be blessed because of them. And may we give you all the praise of our lips and our lives, the praise that you rightly deserve. May all the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you.